Hey, all you movie buffs out there, I'm David Gaddy.
And I'm Jeremiah Orr.
Together we are
the Theonauts. And you're listening to Finding Christ in Cinema with your hosts, Michael and Brendan.
Right here at GCTnetwork.com, your Great Commission transmission.
On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we go back to the zip and zing of yesteryear and look for Christian themes in Trumbo. Why has Dalton Trumbo become so mean? Is he so heavenly minded that he's just no earthly good? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Come on in, admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 109. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation. And ultimately, our Christian walk. You're tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
You threw me off because I was waiting, expecting Mr. Taylor.
Oh, I'm
and
sorry.
I'm Mr. Taylor.
Oh, I can start doing that now.
Hey, but you have, no, because you've had the week off, so it's only fitting that you.
Sure.
So next week you can resume that.
Sure.
How was your week off? Those donuts!
Oh, how did you like the donuts?
The Optimus Prime donuts were fantastic.
Excellent.
I'll be looking forward to those next year.
Next year?
Good. Yes. Right here in the studios of Finding Christ in Cinema. And so is the horse show all done?
Not yet. Not until Saturday.
Okay.
Some would argue Sunday. But
some would argue,
yeah,
like people that are prone to arguing or what?
Yeah. people that like to nitpick.
So you've had the week off. What did you what did we do last week?
Oh, last week we covered the world smash hit from Netflix. Yes, that's right, folks. From Netflix, The Little Prince.
Yeah. That was a great film.
If you haven't watched it,
shame.
Just go.
Yes.
Go watch it. Stop bringing shame upon yourself and your household. Go watch The Little
Prince.
Think
about your ancestors.
Yeah. Dishonor on you, dishonor on the house, dishonor on your cow.
There you go. Now, did you have any addendums or afterthoughts or, oh, and another thing?
I did not.
You didn't?
No.
I wanted to, well, we should be ashamed, speaking of shame.
Speaking of shame.
That we failed to mention that Mackenzie Foy, who played the little girl, mm-hmm. is FCC's very own. Because
really?
Not only was she the little girl in The Little Prince, but she was small, itsy-bitsy Murph in Interstellar.
Oh, wow.
FCC episode number 71. And she's also on the list, the patron Saint Philip presents.
The list!
What's it called? Ernest and Celestine?
Celestine.
And she plays the part of Celestine.
Yeah.
So we need to get to that sooner than later, because I have a feeling, Brendan, that we are going to see Mackenzie Foy for the rest of our lives.
Yeah,
she's a very talented young lady, and so shame on us for not mentioning that she is already part of the club here at Finding Christ in Cinema. What are we going to talk about this week?
Oh, this week we are talking about Trumbo.
Trumbo. That's that Disney movie with the flying elephant?
No. It's everyone's favorite instrument in high school band.
Trumbo.
No. Trumbo. I wouldn't call this a biopic. Would you call it a biopic?
It is?
Okay.
But it's also a little bit of a, hey, geography.
Yes. You'll need to explain that.
We'll talk about that.
Sure.
But are you ready to go to the theater?
I am.
Here we go.
I love our country, and it's a good government, but anything could be better.
You talk like a radical, but you live like a rich guy.
It's the perfect combination. The radical may fight the purity of Jesus, but the rich guy wins with the cunning of Satan.
Your next deal is going to make you the highest paid writer in Hollywood.
Where do I sign?
Are you not, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Many questions can be answered yes or no only by a moron or a slave.
No studio will ever employ a member of the Communist Party.
Decent Americans feel that Hollywood is just a haven for overpaid traitors.
Buddy,
I got nothing to say to you.
We do what everyone says we can't. We write.
Are you out of your mind?
Congress has no right to investigate what we think or how we make movies. I'll write you a movie.
And you don't want your name on it.
No, you don't want my name on it.
Especially if you're still up to stuff. Are you?
Perpetually. The blacklist is alive and well, and so is the black market. We should all be prepared to go to prison.
I don't think you're willing to lose all of this just to do the right thing.
You don't end something like this by giving them what they have no right to ask.
Phone for you.
Well, who is it?
It's Kirk Douglas.
But there's a good story in there about one man who tried to take on the whole world.
And what's the title?
Spartacus.
If we get one big movie, we can get all the big movies. Then this whole rotten thing could collapse.
If there is some other writer's name on it, don't believe it.
Fire Dalton Trumbo.
I don't think you and me are going to be pals.
Do you have to say everything like it's going to be chiseled into a rock?
Whisper a movie you've written in secret. Maybe I've even heard of it.
Maybe you have.
Oh, what a great trailer that really mimics the movie. The whole movie feels like that.
Yeah.
Really fast and just boppy, you know, hot jazz, man. I mean, the, you know, that's going through the soundtrack there in the trailer. It really is. It's a little bit of a noir vibe to it, even though it's in full living color and all that good stuff. What did you think about the movie, Brendan?
I'm so glad we watched it for the show.
And this was really a last-minute pick, huh?
Yeah, because when we ended last week, we didn't know
what we were gonna do.
Wanted to do.
And we had just started on a particular film. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But then talking back and forth, and, hey, this is streaming, and this is, hey, this one's out, and then you're Trumbo.
Yeah.
Boom. We both knew that we wanted to watch this movie when we saw the trailers the first time before it came out into the theater.
Which it didn't even really come out to theaters per se. It was like a limited release or
was it?
Very select theater. Yeah, it didn't come everywhere.
Okay.
Well, even to the one in Murfreesboro. It wasn't there.
At the Carmike.
At the Carmike, yes.
Wow.
The Carmike Wind Song. Not a sponsor.
No, but they should be. Well, okay, so give us some of your impressions on this film.
Oh, I just loved it. My main draw to it was Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I had seen every facet of Bryan Cranston's acting with Breaking Bad.
Which I have never seen a minute of Breaking Bad.
When you do, filters up.
Okay.
I didn't say if. I said
filters
when.
Up on this film.
Well, sure. Yes. Yes. Well, more about that later.
Okay.
But once I started seeing Bryan Cranston, you know, and his success with Breaking Bad, and then he had a one-man Broadway show in which he was LBJ.
Oh.
And that's what inspired that
HBO
special.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Which I would love to see.
So, and I've always enjoyed one-man shows, and I can respect both men and women who do one-man shows.
Right.
And when I heard about this new movie coming out with Bryan Cranston portraying one of the leading Hollywood screenwriters of the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
I'm okay, like, I've got to see this.
So you came for Bryan Cranston, and you stayed for?
I stayed for the story.
Wow,
it was such a cool story.
Why? Why?
I love period pieces.
Yes,
I especially love period pieces revolving around post World War II era.
Yeah,
which
I do too.
Which the character John Wayne is. Quick to remind us, the character. I mean, I'm sure the person was like this too, but the character in the film,
Edward G. Robinson.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of all of them, all the Hollywood greats from the golden era, and you're going to see a lot of those people in this film. But
just one more quick little note about period pieces.
Yes,
and I'm going to.
Is this Gather Around Children?
Yeah. Sure, Gather Around Children.
Okay, Mr. Taylor is going to learn you something.
But I'm going to start the point off with a question, Michael. Yeah. I just want your...
That's not a question. That's my name.
That's the beginning of the... This is before the comma.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Michael, comma. Why do you think this story, even though it takes place in the time frame that it does, in the setting that it does, why do you think it's important for us now?
Well, of course, obviously, history repeats itself, and there is plenty of allegory and parallel and parable that is going to be apropos for this day and age.
Right. They're choosing the writers of this movie, of the producers.
They're using a vehicle that happens to be set 60 or 70 years in the past.
They're using jars of clay.
Whoa.
The actual reference. They're using clay vessels to transport timeless themes. And a lot of times in films nowadays, and even with certain series, whether it's on Netflix or TV or Hulu or whatever, a lot of these period pieces are becoming so popular because they're showing that even times back then have the same troubles of
the
today.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Exactly. So it's just very, like, that's why Downton Abbey was so successful, my humble opinion.
Yeah.
That's why Stranger Things on Netflix right now is getting a lot of buzz.
And didn't Solomon talk about this so many thousands of years ago?
Oh, well, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yes.
But now, Michael, if there's nothing new, then why do we keep studying it? Because we can still learn from it.
Amen.
That's the quick answer.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just think period pieces are very interesting.
And I just love the 30s and 40s and 50s. So
it's a win-win.
Yes, it is. This was a big win for me.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I would, however, caution with period pieces because sometimes they'll sneak something in there.
That you can learn?
You can learn, but may or may not be, I won't say true, but a part of the story.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it'll just be in there to comment on something that's today, but it's not pertinent to the story.
Right.
To the story.
So that's a clunker.
It's it's gratuitous.
Yeah, it's like hitting a pothole.
So.
Why was that there? Yeah. Now, do you feel that anything like that? Was there any part in this film where you said, that's not right.
I didn't feel that from this film. Mm-mm. No, mm-hmm. I thought this was pretty solid, especially John Wayne.
Okay, so it's a lot of spectacle.
Well,
when you're talking a period piece, just by its very definition, that's spectacle to us, is it not? It's like going to a magic land. It's like going to Disneyland or something. You're seeing things that you don't see every day.
That's true.
And we don't see like really cool clothes like all these people wore.
Or nice cigarette holders.
Yes.
And we don't see typewriters in the bathtub.
And I'm just geeking out over all the fedoras.
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
So that's spectacle. But now, getting back to the craft of storytelling, do you like it when there is a really, an obvious conclusion, an obvious that crescendo where the one theme conquers the other? Do you
the climax?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And did you find that in this film?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Are there films out there that you have seen in the recent past where you're a little bit confused on what the themes are, what's trying to win out? Or do you think it's always cut and dry?
See, that's the thing. It's not always cut and dry. But then again, I watch movies differently than most people.
How do you watch them?
I try to watch them the way they're meant to be watched.
Oh, see, I don't. That's where I throw a monkey wrench into the thing.
Oh, well, there you go. There are examples where I've been like, okay, what's going on here? I just can't think of anything off the top of my head.
But it does exist.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So getting back to the overall story, this is a very politically charged film. Would you like to hear some negative reviews on IMDb?
Sure.
I thought that you would. How about this one? More lecturing from Hollywood.
Oh.
I didn't feel that I was being lectured to.
Mm-mm.
Did you?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, I must not have caught that. More propaganda from the far left wing nut bags in Hollywood. See, there's a person that's interested in discussion and discourse, right?
Nut bags.
So this more left-wing propaganda that that I missed out on. I didn't catch any of it. A great movie spoiled? Oh, here you go, Brendan. I thought that maybe you had written this one. Overblown pablum.
What? What was that second word?
Here, this is where what I was looking for.
Pablum?
Yes. This is...
That is a word.
Somebody affixed a word to this that that is very charged. And I can't find it in here because the negative reviews go on and on. All, you know, just left wing and wing nuts and, you know, all this stuff. But the word that somebody used in their title was hagiography.
Oh.
And
wait, someone actually used that in a review?
Yes.
Wow.
And this is why I wanted to bring this up. And hagiography, the classic definition of it is the writings of the lives of the saints. So the church, the Catholic Church, that was a good thing. That word was not a pejorative. But we use it as a pejorative, and that's because it's a biography that idolizes its subject. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that was properly used in that negative review on this film?
I don't think so, because I don't think the film idolized Trumbo. I mean, yeah, he's the main subject of the film, but
he's the protagonist. He's supposed to be the hero. Protagonist, right?
But I don't think he's idolized.
No, in fact, our points are going to point out quite the opposite, mm-hmm. that he was a flawed individual. Now,
can I just read the definition for what pablum is?
Please.
Pablum. Mm-hmm. Pablum.
Baby food.
Yeah. Yes. It in the 30s. But it has now become known as bland or insipid.
Oh.
Bland or insipid intellectual fare, entertainment, etc.
You know what it is? It's these people see it like this.
Life isn't some cartoon musical where you sing a little song and your insipid dreams magically come true.
These people are all Chief Bogos. Mm. All right, so
we need to. If we're trying to make that hour deadline.
Oh, yeah. We're going for a short show. Okay, let's get into some shout outs then.
FCC's very own, we already talked about him, Bryan Cranston.
Yes, from, he was in Godzilla,
mm-hmm.
episode number 45 of Finding Christ in Cinema. He is a phenomenal, that's my greatest adjective that I can use. So every time I use phenomenal, that means I can't think of a better word to describe these actors. He's a phenomenal actor.
I work in a bathtub.
You know what? Oh, okay. And he improvised all of those scenes.
Really?
All of his writing scenes were improv. Now, there are pictures of Dalton Trumbo in the bathtub with that whole setup.
Yes,
but they would just turn the camera on and say, Brian, be Dalton. So, I mean, hey, okay.
There you go.
Who else?
Diane Lane, FCC's very own. Diane Lane, Mama Kent.
Yes.
Mama Kent.
Yes. So she was, Martha Kent in Man of Steel. That was episode number 95 of Finding Christ in Cinema. But to back up a little bit, she was the mom in Inside Out,
mm-hmm.
Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 80. And then, of course, she revised her role as
Martha
in FCC, episode number 102, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, Ultimate Edition. Yes.
FCC's very own, Alan Tudyk.
Yes! Oh, and I'm so happy that we have his face finally on mm-hmm. FCC, because we have had up heretofore we've only had his voice and that would be in Big Hero 6, episode number 61. He played the part of Alistair. I can't remember what his last name is,
but the dude,
the guy that we thought was the bad guy, might be the bad guy, but he turns out he's not the bad mm-hmm. guy. Okay. And then most recently he was on episode number 105 of Finding Christ in Cinema, where he played the part of somebody Weaselton in Zootopia, and such classic lines as,
"Dog is the opposite of friendly. He's unfriendly."
See, and I never would have known that was Alan Tudyk.
That's because Alan Tudyk is one of the greatest voice actors of today. He's like Mel Blanc. He is in anything with a voice, any cartoons. He was the main protagonist in Big Hero 6. Mm-hmm. I mean, not Big Hero 6. We didn't do this movie. Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I would imagine he's going to be in part two, which they're working on.
Protagonist?
I mean, antagonist. Okay. I'm sorry. He is the king. He's the bad guy.
Yeah.
He's the little guy that drove away in his car and made his way to another game and became the king there. And he also really drew on Ed Wynn for that character. We ought to do Wreck-It Ralph because they are coming out with part two really soon. And that's a great film.
I was going to say he's also the voice of, I can't think of his name, but he's the robot in iRobot.
Yes. Yeah. No. Oh, he's okay, the voice. Yes, iRobot.
I think like Sammy or something.
Well, you threw me because he's the voice of the robot in Rogue One, the new Star Wars film that's coming out. Yeah, he's in anything with a voice.
Well, we're trying to get Will Smith, and we don't necessarily want to do Suicide Squad, so we could do iRobot.
Hey, there you go.
Hey,
we'll put it on. Alan. I want more Alan on FCC, and most listeners right now, you know him as, I can't remember his character's name, but he was in Firefly and Serenity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's who that fellow is.
And A Knight's Tale.
Oh, yeah, and we talked about that before the microphones were hot. Yeah. We had to put that on the short list. Who else?
Oh, FCC's very own Dean O'Gorman.
As
Kirk Douglas.
Yeah!
As Spartacus.
He did a great job.
I thought he looked just like Kirk Douglas.
Because he's from New Zealand or Australia. Yeah. And to do an American accent like that, I think he did a...
Especially one so characterized as Kirk Douglas.
Yep. Oh, in fact, he contacted Kirk Douglas.
Oh, no.
You know, who's 100 years old. Hey, I'm going to play you in this Dalton Trumbo movie. How can you give me any tips? You know, he says back to him, says, "Don't worry about playing me. Just play the part. You'll do great." That's really encouraging, isn't it?
Hey, that's pretty encouraging. That's
don't worry
cool.
about playing me. Just play the part.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. Neat man. Guy. So we need to, we're going to have to dip back into Dalton Trumbo's writing. And
I want to see The Brave One, Spartacus.
Yeah. Well, we need to do Spartacus. We need to get Kirk Douglas.
I haven't seen Roman Holiday.
Oh, I haven't seen it in a long, long, long time, okay. So I'd be more than happy to do that. Gregory Peck? Mm-hmm. Oh, man, and he wears some great clothes in that.
See, okay, now I will say that's another thing I really appreciate about this movie is that they took certain scenes from Dalton's movies.
Yeah.
And in some hyper-metaphorical way, they related to the action of the story.
Yeah.
I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, you've got one man taking on the world.
Yes.
Spartacus. You've got a boy and his pet bull.
Yep.
Brave one.
You know, a lot of metaphor.
It was very
a lot of
cool.
parable, a lot of laying side by side.
A lot of auxiliary storytelling.
There you go.
Hey.
And auxiliary storytelling is, well, you got to have a lot of skill to pull that off.
Mm-hmm. Especially to make it fit within the context that you want it to fit in, but not force it.
So getting back to Dean O'Gorman, he, of course, played Keeley in the Hobbit films, and we did two of them, so that would be episode number one of Finding Christ in Cinema.
The very first one.
Yeah. And episode number 54. Now, we have never done Unexpected Journey on Finding Christ in Cinema.
Talking about wanting to finish up the Pokers in the Fire.
I mean, right from the very beginning, we dropped the ball. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to do the very first Hobbit film in order because I'm a completionist. Mm-hmm. I may not like to rank things as you do, Brendan, but I do like to have things completed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you like to see things that are fulfilled.
Yes. Let's see it through to its completion. Who else?
Oh, FCC's very own Helen Mirren. No, you do like her.
I do?
Because she plays a villain so well. She plays an antagonist so well.
She plays it so well that I don't like this lady anymore.
As a person.
Yes. What a foul individual.
Oh, man. In this film, she plays Hedda Hopper,
the
Hollywood columnist.
I hope TMZ that in real equivalent. Life this woman isn't that horrid.
I
hope that this is an over-exaggeration.
A hyperbole?
Yes.
If you will?
Yes.
Well, she is FCC's very own.
How is that?
She is in Inkheart.
Oh! Yeah. That would be
FCC 32.
Yes, with FCC's very own.
I love duct tape.
Andy Serkis, yes, sir.
Okay, who else do you want to shout out in this?
Oh, well, you got to talk about Louis C.K.
You know what? I have never I know who he is. I've never experienced any of his work. He's a stand-up comedian, mm-hmm. and he's a very smart stand-up comedian because he made $1 zillion by bypassing the studios and everybody and selling one of his concerts for like $5. Hey, buy, you know, and made a ton of money, and so much money that he says, I can't keep all this money. It would be wrong, and turned around and gave it away mm-hmm. To charities. So he's a very smart man. He's. I do know that he has a young daughter that he just loves dearly and will do anything for her. My only problem is that you know he's got a foul mouth. He's a very smart man
yeah.
with a very foul mouth.
Yeah.
And again, let's tell everybody, remind you when you're watching Trumbo, you have to have your filters up.
When you're watching, not if you're watching,
yeah,
because
when.
You will want to
you
see
this. You
need
to watch this, but...
Keep those filters up.
Yeah, they throw around a lot of foul language in this movie. But Louis C.K., I think that he played... Oh, and his character was not one of the Hollywood Ten. His character is an amalgam of many different people
okay.
at that time.
Okay.
So he's the one guy that that they did construct for... the purpose of the story.
Sure.
And his character, I mean, very sincere. You like his character
mm-hmm.
because he believes what he says.
And he believes if you're going to lose, you can lose for the right reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which more,
he's just
more on
a
that.
man of principle.
Yes.
A man of conscience.
And I'm just happy that they had Louis C.K. for that because.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Why
do you have to say everything like it's chiseled in stone?
Oh, please, oh. just don't.
Just stop. I'll do it. Just stop talking.
You don't even like me.
What?
I like you fine.
You don't like me. And he didn't say anything today. He was like, well,
he's all, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it came down to. That was their relationship, and they still you know worked together
mm-hmm.
To try and achieve what they thought was a common. A common goal.
Yeah.
Just a great character. Who else?
John Goodman.
Finally!
Finally.
Unfortunately, he's foul mouth.
See, if we could just have him on The Big Lebowski, we could have Jeff Bridges,
goodness.
Steve Buscemi, John Goodman. We could have them all.
You talk about foul. John Goodman, that guy plays a great foul mouth dude.
Well, yeah, we got a gorilla suit.
But he's a fantastic actor.
He is.
He's
he
a
really
phenomenal
is.
Actor. I don't think you and I are going to be friends.
No. When his brother Jaime, which we need to give a shout out to Jaime.
Yeah,
I'll look him up here in a second.
He does great just with his eyebrows. Talk about Michael J. Fox, Marty McFly. Longtime listeners of Finding Christ
yes.
in Cinema will understand that.
Oh, that, I didn't expect that one to happen. Oh, what am I talking
about? Yo, John Goodman, we need to figure out how. Maybe I guess we'll have to do the Flintstones.
The Big Lebowski. We're doing the Big
no.
Lebowski. We are.
Oh, goodness.
We
I
have
can't
to.
Recommend
we,
anybody
we have,
see that.
I can't either, but we need to cover it.
Just because so many people have seen it. But,
exactly. I knew you would find a good reason.
blame it on me.
Oh, okay. All right, here. Hold on. Jaime King.
Yeah.
Not Arlen Hurd. We already talked about him. But no, when they're sitting at the table and Trumbo's trying to, like, sell off the other writers.
Yes.
And the guy playing Jaime King, he's like, but haven't they all been, you know... You know, haven't they all been? And
yeah.
he won't say it.
And then John
Goodman is like, blacklisted. Just say it.
They're so different, like, those two brothers.
Like, well, what about the Rosenbergs? What about the Rosenbergs? They stole the atom bomb. They didn't steal it off a camera truck. I just love it.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man.
And who else?
Oh, Elle Fanning.
Yes. And she plays the part of Dalton Trumbo's oldest daughter. What do they call her? Max. John.
No, Nikki.
Nikki, yes.
Nikola.
It's Nikola. Nikola. Mm-hmm. Nikola Tesla.
Hey.
And I love her. I haven't really seen her in too much. I saw her in that, what was that, that Disney princess movie that she was in?
Which one?
The one with the lady that's married to Brad Pitt.
Maleficent.
Yes, Maleficent. Yeah. So that's the only thing.
Angelina Jolie is who you're thinking.
Okay,
about.
That's the only movie. That
who was she
name.
In that?
She was Maleficent.
No, Angelina Jolie was Maleficent.
Yeah.
Who was Elle Fanning?
The princess. What movie?
Oh,
was
so
that?
So Sleeping Beauty.
Yes, yeah, Sleeping
okay.
Beauty. That's what
okay.
that movie was.
Okay,
that's the only thing I've ever seen her in, and I think that she does. She's a fantastic actress.
Yeah.
One of the
especially when she comes out. there's somebody on the phone for you.
Yeah.
Who?
Some crazy guy
says he's Kirk Douglas.
Or when she opens up the door and there's Kirk Douglas standing there, she just gets that, wow, you know? But there's a scene that I'm going to play in making my point where she's getting choked up and very emotional.
Oh,
She's a great actress, and we'll be seeing her for the rest of our lives as well.
Just, all right, I found Jaime King.
Okay.
John Goodman plays Frank King. Stephen Root plays Jaime King.
Groot?
Root.
Oh, Root. Okay. That's Groot's little brother. It's closer down to the
ground. I still
say
we put the Big Lebowski on the list.
No.
Yeah.
Let's put I Am Groot.
Hey, guys, listeners. Yes. Tell Michael that you want us to cover the Big Lebowski.
You don't. I can hear you all from here now saying, no, that's not a good idea. Any other shout-outs before we move on?
Oh, I think we're good. I think we're set.
It was well put together.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of what these naysayers are with all their political conspiracy theories and stuff. Yes, this is a political movie. The story is about a particular incident in the history of the United States, but I don't think that it was trying to make me believe one way or another. I don't see it. I understand that some films do that, but I didn't see it in this one. Who did the soundtrack? Because the soundtrack is beyond awesome.
I just closed
and
the window.
I put it in my wish list for my Amazon Music, I will get me a copy of that.
Because the haters gonna hate.
It's just some great hot jazz.
I think Taylor Swift did the soundtrack, didn't she?
Oh, is that who did that?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, good. I'm kind of thinking no.
Here, full cast and crew. Let's just click that again. Because the haters gonna hate.
What other trivia was it? Oh, Alan Tudyk. Was mm-hmm. so popular because all the little kid on all the kids on set and everything, he would just do all of his cartoon voices, and so he was the most popular guy on the set.
Oh, that's
with
fun.
The kids. Yeah,
oh, that's so fun.
Do the guy from Wreck-It Ralph. You know, good stuff.
Oh, that's so funny. Theodore Shapiro.
There you
Music.
Go.
Theodore Shapiro.
Thank you, Mr. Shapiro.
Yes.
Was he? That's that lawyer.
He did. Oh. Oh, he did the music for the remake of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Oh.
Which is really good. I haven't seen the Danny Kaye version. I want to see the Danny Kaye version.
I just know the short story. That's all I know.
But Ben Stiller's version is really cool.
Okay.
And, of course, your favorite movie, Tropic Thunder.
Okay. Well, I don't even know what that is. But, Brendan, did we find any Christian themes in Trumbo?
Oh, I think we did.
Yeah, I think so, too. Who's going first?
You know what? How does your point start?
Well, let's just set up the story.
You set up. You go ahead.
Okay,
I'll come in where I
the
need
the Hollywood
to.
10.
Sure.
Okay, so we have Dalton Trumbo is a writer that is also a part of the Communist Party of the United States of America, the U.S. Communist Party of USA, and they are people are, and this is not an illegal activity. And so they're having meetings with these other actors and screenwriters and people in the business, and they're at Edward G. Robinson's home, mm-hmm. and they are. What is our plan going to be? And what's our plan? And they're saying derogatory things about the opposition. And hey, you know what? They're just too cheap to buy the Nazi uniforms. That's mm-hmm. that's what it comes down to. And Trumbo says, you know, please. Let's not demonize people we really don't know, which I found to be a very admirable thing.
Yeah.
Wow. I think that's something that each one of us as Christians could learn from. Let's not just demonize people we don't really know. Let's not say things that we don't know are true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's not Christ-like, right? And as the story goes on, they're getting into ruckus with. What's her name? What's the reporter's name?
Oh, Hedda Hopper.
Hedda Hopper, who used to be an actress, and now she's a Hollywood news writer.
She helped build this industry from the ground up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they're at an event where John Wayne is speaking, and they're denigrating communists, people that hold to communist ideology, saying it's un-American, and we have the birth of the... You know, the un-American activities.
The House of un-American activities Congress.
All
or
this political stuff, and I really don't want to go into the political stuff. We're just talking about how people are treating each other.
That's where Al Pacino got his thing from, Son of a Woman. Hoo-ah!
And so let's just go ahead and throw it out there. Is it possible that this story is overly demonizing one side and overly praising another
idolizing
side? Glorifying? Yeah. One other side? Perhaps. But I'm not looking at it from political perspective. I'm looking at it from through Christian lenses, mm-hmm. and how should we behave. And so much so that Dalton Trumbo is confronted by John Wayne, and they're saying, we don't want your garbage here, because all they were doing was handing out a pamphlet about the First Amendment mm-hmm. rights that mm-hmm. each and every American has. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that you don't have the right to go into a theater, a crowded theater, and yell fire, right? Okay, we know that is not covered as First Amendment speech. But holding different political views is decidedly covered mm-hmm. under the First Amendment. So it gets to this confrontation between Trumbo and John Wayne, and Trumbo so much, you know, really, when it comes between these two actors in this film, in this story, John Wayne doesn't hold the candle to Trumbo when it comes to intellect. And so much so that Trumbo says, if you're going to punch me, let me take off my glasses mm-hmm. first.
I love that scene, by yes. the way. Yes. Because then the jump cuts start happening and all the cameras start flashing. It just gets really intense in like 3 seconds. And then, up.
Oh. Yeah. Yep. Then we find that Trumbo is being called into the studios of L.B. Mayer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most powerful men of one of the most powerful studios.
He's the mayor in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer
yes.
of MGM.
And he is offering him a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you are going to be the highest paid writer ever once you sign this contract. And he says, you don't just write happy endings. You actually believe them. And I like that as well.
Well, that's just too political, Michael.
Isn't that how we should be as Christians as well? Should we be negative and cynical? Or should we believe in happy endings? You don't just write them, you believe them. Oh, but hey, promise me that you will never, I won't see any of this on the front page anymore. You know, communism, blah, 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 blah. Oh,
you won't.
I promise you.
Just stop reading Hedda Hopper. Just stop reading Hedda Hopper.
Well, everything goes south, and these 10 guys are called to Washington or wherever it
They're
was.
They're subpoenaed yes. to Congress. Yeah.
To testify.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys communists? What does it matter?
Are you now?
Yeah.
Or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
It's not illegal. It's not illegal. Now we just have this witch hunt going on. And mm-hmm. anybody that's – can I just – how do I – I'm treading lightly. McCarthyism, bad. There, I said it. It's bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad. It was bad. And these guys are fighting for their the rights that they have as Americans. And, well, politics being politics. You know, see how I'm trying to wade through this, Brendan. This
I'm waiting for you on the other side.
Yeah, you're watching me. You're just sitting there. Let's see him fall.
Like, where's it going to happen?
There's no safety net down there. They go to jail for 10 months. Go to prison. Meet the guy from Lost, which you haven't watched Lost yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Okay. And
wait, he was in Lost?
Uh-huh.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay.
Mr. Echo.
Okay.
Oh, can we talk about Lost for a few minutes? Oh, no. Okay, back to Trumbo.
We are on a time limit here.
So their ability to work is taken away, okay? Because now we have the blacklist.
All because someone named names.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we don't even need, you know, okay. So we're getting to the point here where we need to be in the story. So here comes Trumbo talking to his buddy. Who does Alan play? What's his character's name? It's up here in the shout-outs. Alan Tudyk, he's playing Ian McClellan Hunter.
Yeah.
And Trumbo comes to him with his little buddy. Okay, here, notice, his little friend is with him. Who's his little friend? It's his daughter, Nikki. Is at this lunch, soda shop or whatever. And
who invited you?
Ian, I wrote this script. put your name on it, and we'll sell it. We'll split it 50-50. What does Ian say? Hey, it's just dumb luck that I wasn't called to testify with you guys. It's just dumb luck that I'm not sitting where you are right now. You don't want to do this with me because I'm going to be where you are mm-hmm. soon. Well, not yet. You aren't yet. So you sell it. We'll split it 50-50. He says, I'm not going to do that. I'll take 10%. He says, you'll take 20. No, 30. And that's my final offer.
You're the worst businessman ever.
And what movie was that?
The Princess and the Peasant? No. Roman Holiday.
Roman Holiday. And that starts it all. That starts the family business.
This is where the countering theme comes into play.
Oh. Oh. Wow, there's actually several countering themes then going on in here. Now I've identified three. Is that possible?
Well, I think one trumps out over the others.
Okay.
But yes, I do agree with you. There are several.
Okay. But then this is where the first big theme comes, because now we have a problem. And this is going to crescendo over that mm-hmm. first theme. Mm-hmm. So it wipes it out, right? So now this is the theme that we're dealing with. How is he going to earn a living for his family while he is on the blacklist and unable to work? His ability to earn a living, to put food in his children's mouth, clothes on their backs, and a roof over their head has been taken away for no good reason. For no good reason. So this is the start of what we're going to do. And sells it, makes enough money because they lost their house while he was in prison. So now he's able to get them a home in town. Mm-hmm. And everybody's looking on the bright side. Hey, at least we're in town now. We're closer to the celebration. We can get donuts at the Prime Optimus Prime Donuts easier. Right? All the benefits of living in town. And, well, their new neighbor knows who he is and doesn't take kindly. We don't like your kind around here, and ruins their swimming pool. And so now the kids, and this is what happened in real life with the Trumbo family. The kids are saying, why is this happening to us? Why are these things happening to us? What'd you do, Dad? What did you do? So his new plan has been hatched. He's got all of his buddies working now, writing scripts for the King brothers. Right? So we have five jobs and you have none? No. Now I'm free to get five more guys to write, and you guys can go and get five more. And so what's the big plan that Trumbo has? We're going to write every movie in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony of the guys that are not allowed to work are writing all the movies
are
now.
The unemployable writers are all employed.
Yes. So he goes back home and he has this great speech with his family. He says, you know, we now work at midnight in thick fog. Well, not
among
literally.
Strangers.
Yes, among strangers. Well, not literally. No.
And then the kids are like, oh.
And it's a family business, mm-hmm. is what he says. And we're going to have different phones. And whenever you pick up the phone, no matter who they ask for, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're going to do this and this and this. And so then he said, well, is there any questions or any concerns?
Any questions? Concerns? Yes, Nicola.
Is there a schedule?
What?
I need to know when I can do homework. And I'm a part of a fundraising committee for Negro voting rights. Plus, every other Friday, we have meetings for student council. I have things to think.
We'll figure something out, sweetheart. Won't we?
Won't we? So now that I've tripped through trying to set up the story in a way that's acceptable and not starting any fires between, you know, listeners and different ideologies, because this has nothing to do with politics.
Mm-hmm.
So Nicola has one question, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, this is all fine, but do we have a schedule? Because I got things that I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get that. We'll get that figured out. Well, as time goes on and everybody's busy, well, you have Dalton Trumbo writing scripts. I mean, nonstop. He says he's working 7 days a week, you know, 14 hours a day or whatever. He's writing in the bathtub. You know, mm-hmm. he's writing in his office.
In the bathtub.
Yes. Well, in fact, here comes a birthday rolls around, and his buddy Nicola, his eldest, it's her sweet 16 birthday, and they're singing, you know, mom's singing and taking pictures and everything, but hey, where's dad?
Are you sure we shouldn't go knock?
I'm sure.
You can't take 5 minutes?
Nope.
2 minutes?
Nikki.
1 minute. Dad?
Brady himself, Mark.
Dad?
Go away.
We're having birthday cake.
When you hear me working, you don't knock.
But it's my birthday.
You don't knock. Ever.
So the house is on fire? You don't want to know?
I work in a bathtub surrounded by water. So I'm fairly certain that even if the whole country was on fire, that I could still function as this family's personal slave. And all I ask is not to be interrupted for every little slice of birthday cake. What? It's ridiculous.
Now I've lost my place.
He's unraveling.
Yeah.
There's too much pressure on him now. He's working too much, and he's working with these junk scripts and writing junk stories and these things. And the pressure is mounting on him. And he's taken these prescription pills, which I would imagine, I can't remember what they even were. Like, but
benzodiane?
I'm sure they're uppers.
Yeah.
So he could stay up all night and be writing. It's not good. A lot of tension building up, and it just keeps going. Where, huh?
I was going to say, I feel the need for the bubble pass.
There you go. Boom.
Well, I was just going to say, I think another part of the pressure that's coming down on him is, like you said, he's writing these junk scripts for the King Brothers. They're just in it for
not very much money.
They're in it for the quantity.
Yes.
Not necessarily.
They don't care.
The quality.
Nothing about the quality.
Yeah, nothing. They just want to. They have a gorilla suit and they need to use it. That's what we hear.
So who wants to write a gorilla movie?
There you go.
Yeah.
But there's someone else outside the Trumbo family that has a problem with this. His name's Arlen Hurd.
Yeah.
And he's Trumbo's.
He's a very idealistic person.
I would say one of his best friends.
He really is. Even though they agree that he doesn't like it, Trumbo. They both agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not reciprocal because Trumbo claims that he likes Alan just fine.
Yeah.
But Alan really acts as a true friend.
Yeah.
That's why he's a great character in this film.
Arlen, sorry. And Trumbo acts as a friend too. Because he's when his lung cancer starts
taking
over.
Pays his bills,
sets him up in the best room in the hospital.
Yeah.
Gives him the full shebang.
Yes.
And we see this friendship kind of start to bubble a little bit because Arlen doesn't like the idea of selling himself short for the King Brothers, for these B-grade movies that are just popping out left and right. He doesn't like that. So one night, they're working on a story together, and Louis C.K. / Arlen Hurd has this little conversation with Mr. Trumbo.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
I want to do this later.
No, go, please.
All right.
I mean, do you ever miss writing something, forget great, just good? I mean, you must have ideas still, right?
I've got a few. There's one that won't go away. Cleo and I are in Mexico. I had a bullfight years ago, and the bull dies, and thousands of people just cheering. Three weren't. Cleo, me, and this young boy down front, crying. I always wondered why.
Well, you write it and you'll know. But please promise me, not for Frank King.
Yeah.
Arlen sees the spark within Trumbo. He's always seen it. He's always admired it. But he sees it dying out. Because, as we've already said, Trumbo is putting himself
it's
under
being
this...
being squelched.
This, yeah, it's being quenched.
Yes.
He sees his friend going under all this immense pressure in order just to crank out a very high volume of low quality scripts just to make money to make ends meet.
Right.
And he sees his friend suffering for it the same way Trumbo's family sees him suffering for it. Well, one day Trumbo is called in Arlen. I'm gonna call him Dalton. I keep on saying his last name, first name. Dalton calls in Arlen. He needs help with a rewrite for the King Brothers. So Dalton can write something for their good old backstabbing friend, Buddy Ross.
Yeah.
I owe the King Brothers a rewrite, and I can't do both. There it is. I need you to take over.
So you can help that great guy, Buddy Ross. Mm-hmm.
So we can keep tearing down the Blacklist.
Oh, here we go.
This is going to be a very big movie, and if Buddy gets a good script...
Which you're
going to
give him.
Which I am going to sell him.
For money, because that's why we did all of this, right? Was for the money.
Why can you not see this? If we get one big movie, we can get all the big movies. And then this whole rotten thing could collapse on the sheer irony that every unemployable writer is employed.
Do you have to say everything like it's going to be chiseled into a rock?
You see, we've got two very big ideologues going against each other.
Yeah.
One might even say we've got two themes going against each other through the vessels of these characters, but they are themes nonetheless. Mr. Trumbo, he believes that he can dismantle the Blacklist by hiding under pseudonyms and still writing scripts.
Yeah.
And that is one way to do it. But that's the way that's void of integrity. And that's what Arlen is fighting against. Right. He's fighting against that loss of integrity. Let's hear a little bit more of the conversation.
Arlen, we can do this. We can beat them. We can win.
I don't care if I win.
Everybody wants to win.
No, you want to win. I want to change things.
I want to win so that I can change
things. No, you don't. You want to win so that you can get an Oscar with your name on it this time, and so you can get more money that you burn through writing for idiots.
Why do I have to explain everything to you like you're a...
You don't have to. You really don't have to. You know, you do what you do, and that's fine for you. But don't pretend that you getting your career back is part of some great crusade for mankind, okay?
Doing this for everyone. Arlen.
It's an intense scene. It's
a lot of emotion.
A lot of emotion. Because these are essentially best friends fighting each other. They have the same goal, but they're seeking out different tactics in order to achieve that goal. And it takes its toll on Arlen mentally and physically. And we see that expressed through the lung cancer that he has.
Yeah.
Again, not saying that the mentality like caused the lung cancer, because he's a smoker too. And that's what the movie points out. But this ideological struggle with Trumbo throughout the whole film, it just adds on to that pressure that he's under. And unfortunately,
that's the last time he saw Arlen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the last time. And he gets the gumption to go apologize, to go talk things out. And then who answers the door? It's Arlen's son. He says, I'm sure your father said many nasty things about me, and I want to assure you that they're all true.
Yeah.
Is he around? And then his son says, Andrew.
Yeah.
Name's Andrew. His son Andrew says, I'm sorry, I thought you knew. And then the next scene, we see the funeral. Yeah. And it's so much. And then, you know, you've got the scene. It's still at the funeral. But Andrew presents Dalton with the Book of Debts. That Arlen owed everyone, and Trumbo forgives him. He says, "Look, I'm sorry. I owed your father. The debts are all mine." And then it's these wounds from a friend that I think start spurring Trumbo back to the right path, to the right way. Yeah. Because Arlen clearly says, you know, don't pretend like your way to make a living is some great crusade for mankind. You know, your quest for fame is some great crusade for mankind. And it's basically Arlen calling out Dalton on his missteps.
Let's back up a little bit, because now we can sneak something into the time frame between their big blow up,
yeah,
and then Dalton finding out that that he passed away and forgiving all debts and all of that stuff. Because now we can sneak back to this story between the breakdown between he and his friend, his daughter Nikki. He's having to crank out these scripts for the King Brothers, and then there's a time where he tells his son, I need you to take this to Angora or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
Some town.
It's 40 miles away.
Yeah, and his son says, oh, I thought they were in Hollywood. No, he's on the set. This is the rewrite. He needs it now.
He needs it tonight so they can shoot. Yeah.
But Nikki speaks up for him, so, you know, he can't take it.
Angora's 40 miles.
Yes, I'm sure Chris knows that by now.
Well, he can't.
I'm sorry.
He has a date. He's taking her to a movie.
Well, all right. Then, Nicola, you'll deliver the draft.
I have a protest.
Since when do protests have hard start times?
I'll take it.
Nicola will take it.
I said I can't.
Young lady, you will.
This is important.
So is this.
This is important to me. The date's important to Chris, so figure something else out.
This is important to me. The date's important to my brother. You need to figure something out. See, that's the same argument that he had with Arlen. You know, we can do this and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Just everybody just has to do what I say. Mm-hmm. If you do what I say, everything will be fine. But it's not fine. And now you have a rift between you and your daughter, Nikki, who's one of your very best friends. And you have a rift between you and your best friend, Arlen. He's with you side by side all the way. He's the one that's trying to talk some sense into you. He's the one that has good words that you need to listen to. Well, finally, the big guns have to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order to resolve these two problems, got to call in the big guns.
You have no idea what you could lose.
Oh, please. My career and the First Amendment, our country. Am I missing anything?
Us. You're losing us. Since prison, you don't talk or ask. You just snap, bark. I keep waiting for you to start pounding the dinner table with a gavel.
So in addition to being a pariah out in the world, I also have the supreme joy of battling insurrection in my own
battling
home.
Insurrection.
Where these 10 fingers literally clothe and feed and shelter us.
This isn't just happening to you. We all hurt. Nikki, me, your friends.
Friends? What? What friends? I've got allies and enemies. There's no room for anything else.
We know.
Good. Then this discussion ends.
This isn't a discussion. It's a fight.
That's the pivotal scene in this whole film. This is where one theme conquers another theme.
This is the climax.
This and it. Diane Lane's character is, I love her character. And Diane Lane was the perfect actor to play this part. And so she is pointing out to him, let me tell you the way things really are. And he's still just out of control. He's out of control with all this stress and staying up all night and blah, blah, blah. And she says, you are going to lose all of this. And directly after, when she says, oh, this isn't a discussion, this is a fight.
This is a fight.
She wasn't done talking. We don't get to hear the remainder of their conversation. All we get to see is the cut to the next scene. And here comes Dalton Trumbo to find his daughter. Where is she? I have an idea. Let's go down to the cafe and see.
I didn't want to fight in front of my friends, but I'm not going home.
I didn't come here to fight. You know, your mother is a quiet person. Normally. The effect of which is that she can actually make me hear myself. It's extraordinary. Lately, it's not a sound I like much. Mostly because what I hear is just how afraid I am. afraid that I'm scarring you, all of you? And what if it's all for nothing? What then? Well, so, I fight. It's all I know how to do anymore. It's just rage at anyone who gets in my way. But you have never been in my way, Nicola, not once.
It's crazy how mad you make me. Since all I ever wanted was to be just like you.
Well, I'm afraid to say that you've succeeded.
One theme has conquered another. And now we have resolution between he and Nikki. He didn't get to have that resolution with Arlen. But thankfully, he had his sons in order to, as a surrogate, right? But his wife, it's his wife. Okay, here we go. Proverbs chapter 25, verses 11 and 12 out of the KEB, Brendan, the Common English Bible. Words spoken at the right time are like gold apples in a silver setting. Wise correction to an ear that listens is like a gold earring or jewelry of fine gold. That's what his wife offered. Proverbs chapter 15, verses 31 through and 32 out of the NILT, the New Living Translation. If you listen, Dalton, if you listen, Trumbo, to constructive criticism, you will be at home among the wise. If you reject discipline, Trumbo, you only harm yourself. You're going to lose everything. That's what his wife said. But if you listen to correction, the correction of your wife, you grow in understanding. Nikki, I've been fighting and lashing out again. Your mom told me this, okay? And I believe her, and I've been lashing out against everybody. But you have never, ever, ever been in my way. You're my friend, my buddy. You know what? We didn't get to hear. As soon as Cleo says, this isn't a discussion, this is a fight, and we didn't get to hear the remainder of that conversation, I'll tell you what she said, Brendan. The key text out of Mark chapter 8, verses 36 and 37, out of the NASB, the New American Standard Bible. She turned to him and she says, for what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Of course, those are the words of Jesus. But those are the words that she used. You know why? Because Jesus is the greatest teacher, and Trumbo needed some learning. Right? Mm-hmm. What does all this matter? What you're doing, and that is exactly what Arlen was saying. What does all of this matter? You're going to lose your soul, man. She says, you're going to lose your family. You're going to lose it all. What does it matter if you fight, and win? What does it matter if, joke's on them, because all of the great movies in Hollywood now are written by the unemployable ones. Mm-hmm. What does it matter? What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and to forfeit his soul? For what will a man give in exchange for his soul? What a great movie to teach that concept. Both of our points are teaching that concept. You don't get more Christian than that. So Brendan, put the nails in the coffin, man. Bring us home on this whole point.
Well, let me just reiterate what you said, because I'm really glad that you brought in the scene with Cleo.
Yeah.
Because that is the...
That's the linchpin.
That's the climax of the film. So then what can we say are the controlling theme and the countering theme? What can we say? That the countering theme, this is the part that loses out.
Okay.
We can say that the countering theme of this film is that one can be successful without his family, his friends, and his integrity. And we can see, and we can say that the controlling theme is that one can still be successful with his family, with his friends, with his integrity.
Amen.
And this is...
And it's a different definition of success.
True. Oh, yeah. It's a very different...
So those two themes, one gets conquered. Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we've covered family. We've covered friends, because he makes amends with his family. He makes amends with Arlen's sons. Does he ever make amends with himself?
No. Does he?
Does he? Oh, I think he does.
I do, too.
Because he no longer writes those B-grade movies for the King Brothers anymore.
New script.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, it's a family picture. Something I've been mulling. It's the story of a young Mexican boy and his pet bull.
Sounds a little fruity. What's it called?
The Brave One. Oh, one problem, though.
Expensive?
Worse. It's good.
It's good.
It's worse. Worse than expensive.
He's back to where he was.
Yeah.
Equilibrium has been reestablished.
Oh, wow.
From this point on, we see, even now granted, even though Trumbo faces different challenges as he's coming down from the climactic story mountain, whatever, yeah, as he's falling into place, but he's using that one theme to handle those problems now. Yeah. He's like, look, I now have my integrity. I have my friends and I have my family. I have the love that flows through all of those things.
Amen.
And it took someone to wake him up and realize, what good does it do to profit, or what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? Here's my key text.
All right.
And I was actually surprised you went to Proverbs, because as did I.
Good.
Proverbs 27, verse 6. This time from the CJB, from the Kutzbah.
Oh, right.
From the Complete Jewish Bible.
Oh, hey. What is this?
Wounds from a friend are received as well meant, but an enemy's kisses are insincere. See, Trumbo made his enemies. Buddy Ross, Congress, Hedda,
John Wayne.
Upper Doobie-Doo. Yeah, John Wayne. And they were all, at one point, they all tried to, you know, love up to him. And
yeah,
especially when Hedda tries to say, come on, tell me one movie. As we heard in the trailer. Yeah. Tell me one movie you've written.
Maybe I've heard of it.
Oh, Roman Holiday, yeah. The Brave One. I got Spartacus coming up.
I write the best
movies. Yeah.
He could have said that.
But it took the wounds from his friends, from his loved ones,
yeah,
to really wake him up.
Yeah.
And sometimes that happens. And I think definitely that applies to discipleship. Yeah. Like as is the mission for the GCT network.
Amen.
You know,
look at this. IMDb, 10 stars, full of Christian propaganda.
Someone said that?
No, I'm going to write one.
Oh, do it.
Because this film is filled with Christian propaganda.
If you want to use propaganda in the
pejorative.
Sure. So, wow. Yeah. It took those wounds from a friend to help him realize the truth that it does not profit a man anything if he gains the world,
yep,
and loses a soul.
See, that is what I got out of watching this movie.
That's almost a Christian theme.
What a great film. It really is, to explore those themes. But what other themes are there in here? There are plenty, mm-hmm, in here. You know what? It would have been interesting to focus on Edward G. Robinson,
yeah,
and the position that he was put in. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's something for our brothers in Texas.
The Theonauts!
You know,
I didn't tell them anything they didn't already know.
Yep. Hey, this is my work.
Yeah.
This is all I have.
Mm-hmm.
His face.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's some heavy duty things to explore in that. Dear listeners, what did you find in
Please
in Trumbo?
Watch this film and just talk about it with us.
And let us know. Yeah, join the club. We want you in the club. You let us know. We'll give you all the ways to contact us here at the end of the show. But do we have any feedback?
Oh, yes, we do.
We do? Oh, in fact, that's my cue. Here we go.
Oh! Oog
those there?
Francisco, that's fun to say.
No, not Francisco.
I thought she was talking in tongues or something.
Patron Saint Philip is going to take us to King Philip's Stables of Doom.
Comment on FCC.
Doom.
FCC 108 with the Little Prince.
Yes, and you can find that at ChristianCinema.com.
Oh, Philip. Sorry, I just read like the first line. Wow. Brendan did another great job with his article on the website. I'm so impressed with his write-ups. Thanks, man.
Hey, a little interjection from me. He's true. He's right. He's correct, Patron St. Philip, when he says that Brendan did another great write-up on the website. If you are not regularly visiting the website at Christian Cinema and reading Brendan's blog posts about the film that we talked about, you need to do that because he's able to take a couple of days to really mull over what we talked about and expand on it and to really flesh it out. And it will be of tremendous help to you when you go to use these films, when you're sitting on your
double-decker couch
with your friends and loved ones and you're watching The Little Prince or you're watching Trumbo or you're watching any of the 100 and whatever films that we have done. These are additional tools in order to help you use that film. That's what we're doing this show for. We expect you to use these tools. We're not doing this just for fun. It is fun, but we're providing a tool. Use them. Brendan can help you out with that. Get over to ChristianCinema.com and make sure to read the blog posts. Continue on.
Thanks, guys. I just got buttered up a little bit.
Well, it's true.
I love The Little Prince, continues Philip, and was surprised by just how much.
Yeah.
The animation was gorgeous, and the scoring and voice acting was solid. I have yet to listen to the source material on audio, but plan to do so soon.
Yes.
Like Michael, I get frustrated by the compulsion some people seem to have to post negative reviews and comments about films online. It is often done without any real thoughtfulness or insight, just weak statements like, it was terrible, or the book was better.
Well, and let me interject again. It's even worse than that because it's like faux intellectual. You can tell by the headlines often, and I keep looking to prove myself wrong because I can look at a headline and say, oh, this person believes that they are going to learn you something. They know something that you don't know, mm-hmm. You know, because the good reviews, the headlines are just real generic. Awesome film, great film, blah, blah, blah. Well, the negative reviews are always, well, they're trying to put themselves forth as being very erudite.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, listen to me. I've got something. You thought this was good. I'm going to tell you how you're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
he continues. I get even more frustrated when stuff like this is on a site or group or a group of people who claim to be Christian. I know I'm guilty of this myself at times.
We all are.
Yeah. So we all need regular reminders of the symbol of our faith. That is a cross, not a wet blanket.
Thank you. See, he his feedback.
Man, where the
he wet, always knows what to
wet
say.
Blanket come
he
from.
He knows what to say every single time he writes.
Man, when the film states it is only with the heart that one can see rightly, that points me to 1 Corinthians 13, a chapter I usually listen to weekly. Hey, the description of biblical love is so important to remind ourselves of. Regardless of what we do and how impressive it may seem to ourselves and those around us, 1 Corinthians 13 points out that devoid of proper motivation, it lacks eternal significance.
Dadgum. I just told you. He always knows what to say. That mm-hmm. Patron St. Philip.
There you go.
That's why we are in the King Philip's Stables of Doom. Spooky.
The other and most stated theme is growing up isn't the problem, forgetting is. This makes me think of Matthew 18, 2 through 4. He called a child, had him stand among them, and said, I tell you the truth, unless you turn around and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever then humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. That's from the NET version, the New English Translation. Too often we mistake childlike for childish.
Amen.
Oh, man. We are called not to be immature, but to trust in God and humbly recognize his authority. I think it's interesting humility is linked to being childlike by Jesus.
Yeah.
You got that right. Recently, I started searching my local library site for DVDs and Blu-rays and am blown away at what a selection they have. So a tip I have is to get a card if you don't have one already. And when something you're interested in isn't on Netflix, Hulu, or Amazon Prime, or is locked away in the Disney vault like Lion King, see if your library has...
He didn't say like Lion King.
I did, and I think that's what he's implying.
No, you interjected and you should have identified it as such.
No, it's okay. See if your library has it and put it on and put in a hold for it. I'm having a blast coming across hard to find films to check out. There we go. And supporting my local library in the process. Young Sherlock Holmes is the first one we saw, a great forgotten film from the 80s with a serious pedigree of contributors.
Hmm.
I think you'd be pleasantly surprised by how much the Harry Potter series seemed to be inspired by it. Hey, Christopher Columbus wrote the screenplay after all.
There you go. Hey, interesting.
That's it. Love the show, guys. Hashtag MoeWeLad Gimlet. Gimlet. Gimlet.
Oh, as always, thank you, Philip, for all of your wonderful, wise words. And, okay, we're going to go out and scour the
public library.
Scour the public library. There you go. We haven't had this in a while. You ready for some real news?
Roll it!
Unfortunately, it's not for jovial reasons.
No, it's for very saddening reasons.
Yes, just a few days ago, on August 29th of 2016, Gene Willy Wonka Wilder passed away at the age of 83. Born June 11th, 1933. And as we just said, he passed away on August 29th of complications associated with Alzheimer's. Hey, you know what, though, Brendan? He was fortunate because his Alzheimer's did not rob him of his recognition of his family. What a blessing that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I read a little tribute from, I believe, one of his daughters who said that, you know, he always knew who we were all the way up until the end. Okay. He would have some kind of a, you know, I don't know, Pandora or something, Spotify, you know, playing in the background all the time. When he passed away, Ella Fitzgerald's version of Over the Rainbow was playing.
Oh, man.
Wow. Just a wonderful actor. I mean, 83 years old. I hope that I make it that long. Some of the films that he was in, of course, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory being one of his all-time most famous from 1971. Of course, he had a great collaboration going on with Mel Brooks. So we have Blazing Saddles from 1974, Young Frankenstein from 1974. But also in 1974, not related to Mel Brooks, Brendan, what movie was he in?
The Little Prince.
What?
Which was apparently...
With Jeff Bridges.
No, different production. But this one was apparently a musical.
Huh.
And Gene Wilder was the voice of the fox.
There you go.
Wow.
Anybody, if you have experience with that, let us know. And I need to see what's going on with that. Okay. In 1976, he did a film that had a huge influence on me as a youngster. back then, we didn't have cable. We didn't have satellite. But we had something. There were two different services. One was called On TV and one was called Select TV. And this was a set-top box that just did one thing.
Hmm.
You just, like, on TV, it was a round knob, and you turn your TV to 3 or whichever channel was dead, channel 2, channel 3, channel 4, depending on where you live.
Right.
And then you flip this switch to the dial to on. And then whatever was playing, premium, you know, that's where Smokey and the Bandit and, you know, those kinds of movies. But they would play from 1976 with Richard Pryor a film called Silver Streak. And I don't know, I can only remember one particular scene, and that's where Richard Pryor, they're trying to get away from somebody, and Richard Pryor puts blackface on Gene Wilder with, like, shoe polish or something. And so, and then he's telling, you know, act cool, man, act cool. So Gene Wilder's all, we bad. But it was just awkward and terrible and hilarious all at the same time. TV, his TV credits are quite long as well. But one that really struck me was this children's TV show that I used to watch in Southern California growing up back in the 70s called The Electric Company. Gene Wilder was the voice for The Adventures of Letterman. For anybody that's my age out there that can remember that. See, on The Electric Company, again, Brendan, it was a children's program. Bill Cosby had a recurring role on this. FCC's very own, I'm Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
Had a recurring role on there. He was Easy Reader. His name was Easy Reader, and he was one of my favorite guys on The Electric Company. And then, how about, he has a long list of stage credits as well, Brendan.
Oh, one of which I just find fascinating. He was in the Broadway 1964 adaptation of Ken Kesey's novel, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Wow.
Who produced and starred in, he didn't direct, he produced it and starred in this production.
Morgan Freeman.
No, Kirk Douglas.
Oh, coming right back home to roost here in Trumbo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dean O'Gorman.
Yep, and I just found this out. Gene Wilder's character was Billy Bibbit. Are you familiar?
No, I've never seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but I would like to. Because I like Jack Nicholson.
If you know the story, you know who Billy Bibbit is. Imagine Gene Wilder in that role. Michael, when you see the movie, text me or call me even and tell me if you can imagine Gene Wilder in that role. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Gene Wilder. Yeah. So we lost a great one.
Yeah.
And so that's, we haven't had real news in quite a while, and it's terrible to have to do it for that. But 83 years old, thank you for being such a whimsical, fantastic guy. A song and dance man, too, you know? Mm-hmm.
Just, I did read this. I know this is going to take more time, but we got to gush over Gene Wilder just a little bit.
All right. We're already 5 minutes over.
I know. Okay. I know. It's okay. Apparently, when things were getting in motion for Willy Wonka, he wrote to the director, and I forgot who directed it, but he wrote to him.
Stanley Kubrick.
No.
Oh, okay.
Don't. No, no, of course not.
Johnny Depp.
Wrong one. He wrote to the director. He said, I have this great idea for Willy Wonka's first entrance into the film. As he's walking out onto the rug.
Yeah.
It's awesome. He's walking with a limp. He has a cane. And this is in a letter that Gene Wilder wrote to the director. He's walking with a limp. He has a cane for support. But then he stands still, and the crowd goes silent. And then he falls down. But then he catches himself in a forward somersault and springs back up, and the crowd applauses. And the director's like, why would this be so good? And Gene Wilder says, well, from that point on, the audience will never know if Willy Wonka is lying or telling the truth. Isn't that cool?
That is really cool.
Man. Maybe we'll get to see some of that.
Oh, well.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Well-mannered frivolity.
Do you have any?
Oh, I do.
Okay.
So, I know you wanted me to start Lost. I know Philip wants me to start Stranger Things.
No, he wants you to start Lost first.
Oh, okay, well, that and the mini seasons of Firefly.
Okay.
But I found something else on Netflix that I'm going for right now.
Uh-huh.
Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time what?
It is ABC's little family drama about fairy tale characters that have been somehow transported to our world.
Yeah, I think my wife and some of my kids were nutty over that.
Well, the only reason I'm going into it is because I got a friend who took the playwriting class over the summer for the same program that I'm in.
Uh-huh.
And she wanted to reimagine the story of Beauty and the Beast for her full-length submission.
Okay.
And okay. I got to help her out with that for a little bit. But she always pointed to Once Upon a Time as one of her main inspirations for her play. And then a couple of days I was over at her house, we were working on homework, and we had this playing in the background, and I couldn't help but keep watching Once Upon a Time, and I was just drawn into it. So
you know
now
what would happen if you did that with Lost?
See, I know. But I started Once Upon a Time, and yeah, it's pretty cool so far.
I'm not going to celebrate that.
Okay. You don't have to.
So you just
It's my well-mannered frivolity.
Oh, you okay? Well, I didn't think it was.
Oh.
Okay. What else? I don't have anything, I don't think.
Oh, well, there's this little back-to-school bash happening at Aiken, my home school now, next week, and me and a couple other guys, live entertainment.
Can juggle?
No, that's just me mulling things over with my hands.
So what are you going to do?
Oh, we're going to do like some live entertainment with, you know, actual playing and singing songs. And then we're going to let the kids have a little dance time.
Awesome.
Do stuff like the electric slide and, you know.
There you go.
Kids do the electric slide, right? They do the cha-cha slide.
If you do an electric slide, don't treat it like a slip and slide because the water and electricity will be no good. You weren't thinking of doing that, would you? They wouldn't put you in charge of kids if you'd think of things like that.
One more quick thing is last week I actually did make it to the movies.
Oh, you did?
Yep, to help celebrate the birthday. Actually, this the same girl's birthday who wrote the Beauty and the Beast play.
Okay.
And we went to go see Southside with You.
Ah, the Obama first date story.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
It was pretty
cool. Speaking of hagiography.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it?
It was pretty cool. I liked it.
Yeah. So. Did you learn anything?
Yeah.
Were you supposed to learn anything from that?
I think so.
Okay. Well, then do a Monday movie review, please.
If time allows.
I know, you're a busy guy. Yeah. But it doesn't have to be a book.
Well, if it's going to be good. Is it expensive? Worse.
It's good. It's good. The lightning round! What do you got?
I just had three frivolities in a row. You go first.
Oh, okay. My lightning round is, I've mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about the Olive Tree Bible Study app. Get a copy of Young's Literal Translation, YLT, YULT.
YULT.
Yes, get a copy of that. When you are reading in your Bible and something, you know, you aren't quite sure on something, is what I'm reading here, this translation, is this a good translation? Compare it to the Young's Literal Translation. Not that it is the end-all be-all, but it is one of the best translations that you will get in order to get a literal word-for-word translation. And you will be amazed by some of the discrepancies between your favorite translation and Young's Literal Translation. So that's just a tip. Have it in your toolbox. The more tools, the better. More the merrier, right? Especially when it comes to studying Scripture. And that's it.
Hey, there
that
you
was
go.
Probably, what, 25, 30 seconds?
I wasn't watching the
That was lightning-y-ish.
It was electric. Just like the company, just
with
like
no
the
water.
Slide. Yeah, with no water.
Yeah.
Please, no water, guys.
No, especially around children.
Yeah,
electricity,
you got that right.
Water, and children do not mix. There's another tip. That's another lightning round.
Hat tip.
Yeah.
Or pro tip.
Yeah,
my lightning round. I got a little musical selection for you guys. Wilder Adkins. He's a colleague. He just put out an album this past spring, and I finally got a chance to listen to it. It's really good.
Good.
The album is called Hope and Sorrow, and the title track is the one I want you guys to listen to. Link in the show notes.
If I could save time in a bottle.
No.
Okay.
Link in the show notes to his Bandcamp page, and from there you'll be able to listen to the whole album. But I just want you guys to hear the song Hope and Sorrow. Check it out.
If I could save time on mass transit, I'd use it. That's what Jim Croce really was trying to say.
No.
I so. Brendan, what is coming up on Finding Christ in Cinema?
Well, first of all, we were going to do Captain America Civil War. That is out now. That's what we were going
to do. Or tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Is it?
What's today? Oh, yeah, now, the 2nd. We're recording on the 2nd.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. However, given our real news subject matter, we think it's only fitting.
And right. And proper.
And, yes, that we cover a Gene Wilder film.
Yes!
And really, the only one we can do on the show is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I think we should. We owe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing next week, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, after which we'll most likely do Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
But we do also have a question for you, oh, dear listeners.
The question we were preparing, in fact, I started breaking down Good Will Hunting. Good Will Hunting. I've always heard that this is one of the greatest movies, you know.
Ever.
Ever,
mm-hmm.
Really. And the script is fantastic, and it really is a fantastic film. But it will set the standard. It will be the highest achieving film for gratuitous uses of the F-bombs and every bad word that you can possibly think of, like every other sentence in this film. It is profanity laced, riddled with profanity, as a matter of fact.
Permeated.
Yes. And so it's worse than Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile. I mean, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great story with some great Christian themes in it. And so we're going to throw it out to the listeners.
Is it a redemptive story?
Is it? Can we redeem this film to justify doing it on the show? Mm. So give us some feedback, please. We want to hear from you. What's your opinion on that? We value your opinions. Have you seen Good Will Hunting? It's great. I think that correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe that David Gaddy suggested that this might be a good film for us to cover.
That doesn't surprise me.
So anyway, let us know. Give us some feedback. We'll figure it out. But whatever we do, it's going to be right here in the studios. Finding Christ in Cinema is live in the GCT Network studio each Thursday, Lord willing. However, for the foreseeable future, we are changing that to Fridays. Fridays at around 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us for live video and especially chat using the chat room and video player at gctnetwork.com/live. Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. To witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational digital ministry, including all 109 episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema, Brendan's Monday Movie Review, and links to all our social media profiles, visit our website at christincinema.com. You can send email to us. Just address the envelope there, fcc@gctnetwork.com.
If you're feeling fidgety,
I always are,
and you can't control your fingers, and you just have to dial a phone number that leads to the GCT Network.
Come on, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
You can call us at 507-407-4286, or our backup, not a sponsored, duct tape phone number.
Duct tape.
We broke it at
507-407-GCTN. Now, let's say you just want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
You love falafel.
Who does? I don't like falafel.
But you don't like comedians.
No, I don't. Oh, Brendan, who does?
You know I hate comedians.
This guy hates them.
I can tell you what.
Man.
You can go to iTunes. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to TuneIn Radio. But if you don't like those three wombats.
No, not those three wombats. No way.
Because this is not some cute technology.
This is not some cute technology like the Iron Man suit.
That's Kirk's son. Yeah, that is. You can now go to Google Play Music and search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
Yeah, cut to it.
That's fine. They'll float to the surface.
Yeah.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas,
the Theonauts!
Get over to our official website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor. Anything else?
It was tied to an anvil.
These are dark times.
And that is a wrap!
One.
I agree.
Movies are the most powerful influence ever created.
So who wants to write a gorilla movie?
I work in a bathtub.
Being me has its privileges.
Working in a bathtub.
Hey, there you go. The scripts always come out squeaky clean. Oh, that was good. You know that was good.
No, I think that was...
Who wants a gorilla suit?
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission
at gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
I don't want Helen Mirren to be.
She's
FCC's
there.
She's very own.
I'm sorry. She's there.
No.
Yeah.
Doug is the opposite of friendly.
She's unfriendly.
He's unfriendly.
Yeah. Helen Mirren.
I thought she was talking in tongues or something.
Well, yeah, when she was in L.B. Mayer's office, boy, was she talking in tongues.
Oh, man.
That's shocking.
I know. She went to his mailbox, read his mail out in public.
Ooh-wee.
Martha.